the day is arriving when you will have to leave the body. So we have been identified in the world outside so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. Now the only remedy is we should know how to leave the body at will. So masters always tell us what they bring us. They say first of all that there is the maker of all this universe. He also made your body in the womb of your mother. So Master said the same thing, they say, love God and all those whom God has created. So all scriptures when you see, look through them, they enjoin this thing. God is love and love is God. Tenth Guru says, hear ye all, lend me your ears, I tell you the truth. Whether you bear the labels of one school or the other, the way back to God is also through love. God is love and love is innate in our souls. Now instead of that love being had a boost by coming in contact with all love which is controlling us in the body, that being attached to the outside things, which is termed attachment. Love knows giving, and attachment means squeezing, dragging something, usurping something for one's own self. Vast difference between the two. So they bring the religion of love. Kabir also, all masters I say, Kabir says, well, love thy man body is the only golden opportunity in which you can love God. How? When you are brought in contact with God, which is controlling you in the body. The outer expression of which is light and sound. So if someone is, we have got love for the world, which is called attachment, that's the reason we go where we are most attached. In man body, we could have contacted God within us, which is all love. Had that been become the ruling passion, then naturally after that we would have gone to the lap of the Father. The reason of our coming again and again, ever since we were separated from God, we have not yet been successful to go back to our home. So all masters tell us like that. All those who are on the spiritual way, St. Paul said, what you should serve one another with love. Lay Saint, one who served his fellow men, he is the true lover of God. So one and all, you see, Taylor said, he, in his poem, he prayeth best who loves best. Saint John also saying, he that loveth not God, loveth not, knoweth not God. One and all. Bible says so, love thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy strength, and love thy neighbor as thyself. So all masters who came before, that man God also desires that the controlling power keep his hand in the body, and we also, the children of God, in the same body. If we torment anybody, how can we know God? We want to meet God. But the love God residing in man body and his children residing also there, you are tormenting them, you are squeezing their blood, how can God be met with you? So Puri said, torment not anybody if you care to love God, to see God, to meet God. One devotee prayed God, O God, just would you kindly pay a visit to my home? He said, yes, I will come. He made all preparations, cleaned his house, laid on the bed of roses for God to come. He also cleaned clothes and sat at the door outside, waiting for God to come. From morn till night he was there, and God did not come. One old man did come who could not walk properly. He was asking, I am hungry, will you kindly give me a loaf of bread? He passed by. At night, devotee prayed, God, you promised to come to my house and you have not come, because I did come. I was asking for a loaf of bread from you, and you did not give it. Unless our inner eye is open to see God in everybody, to see His children, we're all brothers and sisters in God, we cannot know God. So love is the main thing in all affairs. Sadhguru says, God is in the whole world, and world is in Him. If you tease anybody, you torment anybody, mind that God will take, He will punish you for that. So truth remains, when God wanted to be many, there was light. And that light is the cause of all creation that resides in every heart. That light we have to come to know. We are all children of light. So light take care that the light within you is not darkness. You see? So light is there. So love knows service and sacrifice. Whom you love, you want to give everything to him. Love knows giving, as I told you. And attachment wants everything to your own self. That's the vast difference between the two. Kabir says, so long you are in the body, in Punjabi language, body is called as day. Day word means also to give. He says, so long as you are in the body, give, give and give. Man is one who lives for others. Animals live for their own self and for those who are his children. If we behave the same way, how can we be better than the animals? One poet says, look to the face of the animal, it is just like facing the earth. If that remains all true earthly, that is all right. But God made man's face upward. Look upward. Rise above this physical body. So know, you see, this body is the true temple of God, in which we reside and also God resides. Your temples, which are made outside, they're made out of the model of man body, dome shaped. You see, in that they put in the symbol of God, made out of stone, some gods. In Mecca, you see, you have kept there the quarry kept by Khalilullah Ibrahim. That's a remembrance of that prophet. And these are made symbols kept there for the love of God, for remembrance of God. They are both equal. Now the one query is, which is better of the two? Both are kept with the same symbols. The temple has the same light, the same. The mosque has the same light. The church has the same light. All holy places have the same light. Which is better of all of them? That's the only symbol kept there in sweet remembrance of God. Such light is the, which is seen as the outer expression of God. So he replies, he is better of the two in whom that light is effulgent. That is, light is radiating. That is better of all these. So masters tell us, you see, in all religions, you know the highest degree which we are supposed to have is to know God, and the degree is given for a Sikh who becomes a Khalsa. And definition is given to see the great conflagration of light of God. Only he is Khalsa, not that who is bearing the label of that ism, but who sees inner eyes open to see the light of God. A Hindu is one, truly speaking, when the light which is makes outside in worship and other things, or in the temples he goes and lights the candles. He is not the true Hindu, he is true one who lights that candle within, which is already there. Kabir says, there is one lamp burning within you without candle, without the wick and without the eye. We are the children of light, take heed that the light within you is not darkened. So this all master tell us. So differences are there. These are man-made. One truth is working at the basis of all religions, of all master's teachings, whether he is a believer in God or not, both ways. These differences came up as a result of our own whims, excuse me if I say. One rishi stood up with the, what you say, result that it's all God. Our soul is also God, fully. Then the other came up, the follower of Shankara, Ramanuja. He said, there is still covering up of what you say. They are covering up the body. This is physical, this is astral, I mean, there are pranas, there are manomay, there are conscious, I mean intellectual, and there is of peace and jaya. Still it is a second. So when they went on, when they saw that very expression radiating through a man's body, he said he is above all. So these all differences are due to them. They came up. Why? On account of narrow-mindedness and bigotry. As also due to climatic influences or customs prevailing. I may give you one or two examples to show that. In Arab there's dearth of water. Prophet Muhammad came up. He saw that the water is very less, the dearth of water here. He said, all right, when you can wash your hands, feet and face, that is sufficient to say the prayer of God, prayer. When there was no water whatsoever, then he said, he had the custom, you see, tayammum, that is, besmear your hands and feet with the earth and sit for prayer. In the countries where water is in abundance, they say, unless you take a bath, you cannot say, your prayer is not accepted. So this difference is due to the climatic influence. Means when you sit for prayer, for the sweet remembrance of God, you sit wide awake.
not sleeping.
In the Christian churches, you find to sit bareheaded is a sign of respect. You have to go to the Sikh temples, they think that the sit head with covered head, this is a sign of respect. So difference is about the customs prevailing, though both mean the same thing, to sit respectful. You follow my point? So on account of narrow-mindedness and bigotry and custom prevailing and climatic influences, these differences are there. And these are man-made. So temples, as I told you, true temple is man's body, in which the light of God is effulgent. You see, all these temples have two aspects. When God wanted, and one wish to be many, so ringing radiation came out of that. The two aspects of light and sound are the outward expressions of the existence of God. So they have made tables after the man body, dome shaped, and put in light and sound. Simple there. In churches, no shape, they put in light and sound, principle there. In churches, when you go, light, they lit the light already lighting, and the bell is going on ringing already. In the Hindu temple you go, those who enter, they light the candle and also ring the bell themselves who enter. So these are only meant, you see, two symbols kept in the outer temples and churches, etc., to show that such like light and such like sound is within you, reverberating. O man, when you see from outside, I am a hidden treasure within you, why don't you find me? This is Quran says. All others also say, there are treasures of divinity within you, why not dig it up? One Bhukha saint says, the world there is nobody hungry. Only this knot of the physical and our soul being under the control of mind and outward faculties is in it. If we don't know how to unravel it. That is why we cannot find, you know, the God is within us. We are seeking outside. How can we succeed? So all masters lay much stress on that. They say, body is the temple of God. If you want to find Him, you will find Him only within you, which is the controlling power. Now, outer religions aim at what? They are preparation of the ground, I would say. Man is a social being. He must have some social body to live in. So they teach us to have a life of ethical life. In all religions, you say, although their outer forms and rituals are different, but they all enjoin what your true life. Truth is above all and true living is above truth. So we have kept this man's body outwardly very clean, but we should keep the hearts also pure. We spend thousands of dollars for the outer cleanliness, but what we have done to clean our hearts? Blessed is the heart that are pure, pure as heart, for they shall see God. Whose mind is defiled, his whole, everything is defiled. Whose mind is pure, everything is pure. If you keep it filthy, cloth or anything, the bad odor will come out and fill the whole atmosphere of the room. So we should look after people are after outer cleanliness, they should have the inner pleasures. If they want that God, who is already there, He will manifest His form, His appears, make manifest when their heart is pure. So all masters say like that. So spirituality, what it is, actually speaking now. The word religion also means the same thing. They don't mean the outer isms or the social body that we are carrying, that's right. The word religion means, re means back, leisure to bind. To withdraw our attention from all outside and bind with God ourselves. This is called religion. This is called, truly speaking, spirituality. Word yoga also comes from the root, yuj. That is to bind back our soul back to God. So, what is the highest religion in the world then? Outer forms, they are, Master, don't touch them, because there are already so many, more than 700 already. So that is the first step we have taken, but for the purpose for which we have taken, we should see that. Kharsa is one who sees the light of God, a Hindu is the one who sees the light of God, a Mohammedan also sees who sees the light of God, and Krishna also saying who sees the light of God. So which is better and which is of the two? So that man body is blessed from it, that radiance, ringing radiance, is radiated. So, the highest religion is what? What Guru Nanak defines, we are all children of God. We are living in one class, bearing different labels as the body. Purpose is the same, to know God. The ultimate goal is to have right way of living. Our livelihood should be earned by sweat of brow. Our lives should be pure, and to know God. See, that all masters who came in the past, they had the same teaching underlined. Guru Arjan broke the ice, I would say. The scriptures of various masters you'll find in their own books alone. But in the sixth scripture, which was compiled by Guru Arjan, he compiled as many masters' sayings as he could lay hands on in one volume. That is to mean the whole object was to unite all mankind in the silken bonds of love, and not create schism. That is what the master always do. They come to unite, not to disunite. The whole purpose of, they bring the religion of love to mankind. They say, who created you, have love for that. Whatever has been created by him also, have love for that. It is told that Moses was passing by in the wilderness. There was one shepherd praying God, "Oh God, if you were hungry, I would have given the milk of the sheep today. Oh God, if you felt cold, I would have just worn the wool of the sheep and given you, made a coat for you to wear around." He was going like that, and Moses passed by, "Are you a heretic? What are you talking? Can God drink your milk?" He was sitting in love of God. To love, no, I bounce. God looks to the heart from which those words are coming. He began to cry, "Oh God, I have displeased you." And while crying, he went into within. And God appears, "I look here, I'll also take your milk. I'll also wear your clothes." And then Moses, when he came back, sat in meditation inside, God appeared to him, told him, look here, I have sent to you to unite those who are not united with me, not those who are united to break away from me. Go and ask for him. Forgive him, you know. So love knows service and sacrifice. Love knows giving. And only we know, I am not talked out about, a little I gave in the morning about meditation. Tomorrow I will submit to you what these masters give. The third talk I will again give you, where God is actually in you. How skip to maintain it. So my point is, you see, if we know how to give to others, then everybody will be happy. So master's way is sometimes to give direct talk and sometimes by means of parables. Christ also did that. It is said in the Puranas that Vishnu, the Lord of maintenance, invited all gods and those usurs, they are not gods, gave them a feast. The feast was served, food was served, and the gods also took their place, sat down, and the others also sat down. And Lord Vishnu stood up, said, look here, gentlemen, all this food for you. Eat to your heart's content. But my one condition should be observed. And what is that? Don't bend your elbows to eat the food. Those who are not gods, they thought over it, they said, stay here now. If we do not move our elbows, how can we eat food? They could not come to left this place in disgust. Told that Lord Vishnu had played a mockery. And the other pure gods sat down, he said, these are the words of Lord Vishnu, must be something at the bottom. For a while they came, it struck them, well, it is very easy. Let others, make others eat. Why bend it, but let yours remain as it is, let others eat. The result was, everybody ate. Why we are unhappy? We want to make ourselves happy at the cost of others. We want to be wealthy at the cost of others. If we won't let anybody die of hunger, we will never die of hunger. If we see other men rich, then you will also become rich. So giving, you see, love knows giving, and sacrifice also is necessary. So this is the religion, outer religion, I would say, which masters who came from time to time to guide the child humanity, and the inner way to know oneself and to know God. So this is strictly speaking, to liberate us from the entanglements of mind, intellect, outgoing faculties and body. This is, and contact with the God is called spirituality. It is no spiritism, no spiritualism, no hypnotism and no materialism. And outer religion, as I told, is a religion of love. If you love God, God is that sin in your heart, you must love Him. Those whom you see you do not love, how can you say, no, you do not see, you love it. So these are the, what is called spirituality in few words. Details are sufficiently long, but few words. So this morning I gave you only the kernel point of it. This is the casing part of it. So tomorrow we'll be here, what time will be announced, to give you further two talks, three talks, whatever would be necessary. to bring home what is the two way back God home, as described by All Masters.
Hello and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The recording you listened to was the last 30 minutes of Master's talk called True Spirituality, which was given on October 8, 1972 in New York City. Our reader this evening is Eric Love. Hello, Eric.
Hello, Christine. God bless you.
Please go ahead.
Thank you. Tonight I'll be reading from the Law of Karma 3, which was the third installment of a series of installments from the Wheel of Life in Satsandesh. This was, you can find this October 1968, Satsandesh. The way in which the Master tackles this intricate and baffling problem of karmas may briefly be stated as under. Sanchit, or seed karmas. These are latencies lying in the storehouse of one's account from endless ages ever since the world began. No one escapes from them unless the same are worked up without making any more addition thereto, which, of course, in the nature of things is an impossibility, in numerous lives that lie ahead. It is therefore not possible to exhaust this tremendous credit balance in one's account. Is there then no way to cross over the great chasm that lies between the conscious and the subconscious, and again, the gulf that separates the subconscious from the conscious? Every wrong has a remedy. It may be spiritual or a secular one. If one fries seed grains in a pan so that they get puffed up, they lose their fecundity or power of fruition, that is to say, the power to germinate into their fruit. Exactly the same way that Sanchit karmas can be seared and scorched with the fire of Nam, or the Word, and rendered harmless for the future. For then one becomes a conscious co-worker of the divine plan, losing all contact with the unknown past. Kalanda karmas. These constitute one's present fate, his stock in trade, or destiny, as it is called. The fruit of these has got to be borne, no matter how bitter or sweet, for one cannot avoid reaping the harvest already sown. The Master, therefore, leaves them untouched for man to endure with loving sweetness and to finish up during his present lifetime. If these karmas were to be wiped out or tampered with in any way, the body would itself would dissolve. In grappling with these, a disciple is, however, not left alone. As soon as the Master initiates, the Master Power takes charge of the disciple. He is helped a good deal at every step. By gradual spiritual discipline, he learns the process of self-analysis and withdrawal and grows strong in spirit, with the result that the otherwise painful effect of these karmas just blows over as a gentle breeze, leaving him unscathed. Even in serious and incurable cases, the master power brings into operation his laws of sympathy and mercy. All the troubles of the devoted disciples are greatly mitigated and softened. Sometimes the intensity of bodily and mental troubles is increased a little to shorten the duration of the suffering involved, while at others the intensity is greatly reduced and the duration is prolonged as may be considered appropriate. But this is not all. The sufferings, troubles, and diseases of a physical body accrue from sense pleasures. Bodily troubles are, of course, to be borne by the physical body. The Master, as a word personified or polarized God, knows all about disciples, wherever they may be, either at a distance or near at hand. He even may take over, by the law of sympathy, the burden of the karmas of his devoted disciples on his own shoulders to bear them, for the law of nature has got to be compensated in one form or another. This happens in very rare cases, as the master may think fit. Besides, no disciple would like to adopt a course in which the master should suffer for his wrongs. On the contrary, the disciple must learn to pray to his master sincerely, and if he does so, all feasible help is sure to come and relieve him, or to soften the situation, and to minimize the resultant suffering. The soul itself, becoming strong by feeding on the bread of life, and by drawing sustenance from the water of life. There are, however, things over which a man has no appreciable control. Number one, the sweets and bitters of life, with comforts and discomforts, physical as well as mental. Number two, riches, opulence, power, or destitution, penury, and abjectness. Three, name and fame, or notoriety, or downright oblivion. All these are the usual adjuncts of life on earth, and come and go as predestined. All human endeavors are directed toward gaining one or more of the sweets of life, and in avoiding what is bitter without realizing that life itself is as evanescent as a cloud, a shadow without a substance, and mere mirage and will-o'-the-wisp, ever flitting and eluding the unwary pilgrim on the scorching desert sand of time. The master saints, by precept and practice, bring home to the jiva the illusory nature of the world and all that is worldly, and manifest in him the perennial fountain of life, finding which one gets saturated to the very marrow of his bones and the fibers of his being, and becomes fully satisfied, able to sing away life itself. Kriyaman karmas. These are the karmas that we daily do during our present sojourn on the earth plane. In this respect, every disciple is enjoined to lead a strictly chaste and pure life, hereafter in thoughts, words, and deeds, and to abstain from all that is evil. For any violation or disregard in this path is bound to bring trouble in its wake. The price of sin is nothing short of death. Death at the very roots of life. The question here arises as to how master saints take over some of the burden of karmas of the jivas under special or rare circumstances and manage to rid them of the impalpable effect. The karmas connected with the physical body, as said above, are to be born on the physical body. Jay Dunn wrote, God clothed himself in vile man's flesh, that so he might be weak enough to suffer well. We have in history an incident that occurred in the life story of Babar, the first Mongol king of India. His son, Humayun, fell seriously ill, and everyone despaired of his life. The king, in silent sympathy, prayed to God that he might be permitted to take over his son's illness. And strange as it may seem, from that very moment, the tables were turned. The prince began gradually to recover, while the king languished and died. This is just a single instance of vicarious suffering on the human plane. The master is of the Lord of compassion. In his kingdom, which is boundless, there is no count of the deeds. Embedded in the divine, he grants contact to each individual with the saving lifelines within, which serve as a sheet anchor in times of distress. The ship may toss on the stormy waters of life, but being moored to the floating buoy, it keeps steady on its keel in spite of the stormy winds and waters around. Man is irresistibly forced to come onto the stage of the world, blindfolded, just to reap the fruit of his prarabdha karmas, of which he has no knowledge whatsoever. He is not even aware of the working of the physical plane, not to speak of the higher regions. Without his professions and protestations, he renders lip service to God, having no access to the inner divine links, the saving lifelines, the light and voice of God. He does not even know the nature of his own real self and spends all his time in sense pleasures. He takes himself to be but a creature of chance and lives by chance, a mere puppet on the stage of life. The saint, on the other hand, comes with a commission and a purpose. He is God's elect, his Messiah and his prophet. He works in his name and by the power of his word, and has no independent will of his own, apart from the will of God. And being a conscious co-worker with him on the divine plan. He sees the hidden hand of God in all the affairs of life. Living in time, but really belongs to the timeless. He is the master of life and death, but is full of love and compassion for the suffering humanity. His mission is to link such human souls with God as may be yearning for a reunion and may be in earnest quest. His sphere of action is quite distinct from and independent of avatars or incarnations, for the latter work only on the human plane. Their job is to keep the world in proper shape and order. Lord Krishna has declared, in no ambiguous words, that he comes into the world whenever there is an imbalance in the forces of good and evil, the object being to restore the lost equilibrium, to help the righteous and to penalize the unrighteous. Similarly, we read of Lord Rama in the Ram Charitra Manas. He reincarnated himself when the evil in the world was in the ascendant. The avatars come to reestablish righteousness. They cannot, however, throw open the prison gates of the world and take the jivas out into the spiritual planes. This work falls purely within the domain of the saints, who consciously act as co-workers with the power of God and the divine plan, and teach the worship of the divine alone. For that alone puts an end to the effect of karmas. A Muslim divine says, at last it came to life, and in the kingdom of dervishes, karmas count for naught. Again it is said, a master saint chases away the karmas which apply as jackals do in the presence of lions. No one can escape from the fruit of his actions, not even the ghosts and spirits, nor the giants, demons, dinars, yakshas, gandhavaras, devas, and the gods. Those with luminous, astral, and ethereal bodies enjoy the fruit of their actions in the region of Brahmand, the third grand division, above the first two, Teen and On. They too aspire for and await the human birth to get out of the clutches of karmic relations. For in human birth alone, there is a chance of contacting some God-man who may reveal to them the secret of the divine path, the sound current, or the holy word. It would require many years of patient meditation for a man to be able to understand, in some measure, the arrangement of God's mighty administration. And very little can be said to the inquiring seeker at this stage. It is also equally difficult to understand a genuine spiritual master. But with all this, a saint ordinarily plays the normal part of man while on this earth. And he always speaks of himself as a slave, a bondsman, and a servant of God and his people. In taking over the burden of the karmas of the devoted souls on his shoulders, A master saint does not overlook or eliminate the highest law. His position may be likened to that of a king in disguise, who, for ameliorating the condition of his subjects, freely mixes with them to understand their difficulties, and at times even shares with them their joys and sorrows. So far as the human body is concerned, a master saint makes use of a special divine concession. He may reduce death by guillotine to a thorn prick. At times he allows his body to suffer in some slight measure, which for an ordinary individual might have been a great travail. In this way, he shows man that all bodies do suffer, for this is nature's law, for all embodied creatures. Physical life is all misery, declared the Sakyamuni, Lord Buddha. Saint Kabir also declared that he had not seen a single human being who was happy. For each one whom he happened to come upon was in misery. Guru Nanak graphically draws a thin picture of the world as full of sorrow and suffering, except for rare individuals who had taken refuge in Nam. It is because of this sad experience all around that we take the God-man for an ordinary being, like ourselves. In suffering bodily pain, he plays the part of a man to all appearances, but internally he is always separate from the physical body. The constant contact with divinity within him enables him to escape what may otherwise have been an unbearable sting for the disciple. Everyone who has been put on this path and is engaged in the process of inversion can withdraw his sensory currents from the body by concentrating them at the center at the back of the eyes. There may be differences in the time required by different individuals to achieve this, but the results are sure to follow and are actually verifiable in each case. The devoted disciples on the path, even when on the operation table, voluntarily dispense with the usual administration to patients of anesthetics. They withdraw their consciousness from the body and do not feel the effect of the surgeon's knife or lancet. Abhimani Singh, who was sentenced to death by cutting off each joint, it is said he not only smilingly submitted to the process, but even remonstrated to the executioner to stick to the letter of the order when the latter tried to get rid of the nefarious job and wanted to make short work by cutting down the body part by part instead of joint by joint as ordered. The satsangis who study things with their open eyes very frequently come across several such cases. The souls that have inner access remain absorbed in the great self within and do not make a show of their capabilities. This rule holds good for a simple reason, that feats like these are calculated to pass for miracles and are to be avoided scrupulously. Saints do not display miracles, nor do they allow any of their disciples to indulge in such vainglorious empty baubles. Saints, when seemingly ill, are generally seen taking medicinal doses as may be prescribed by the physicians, but actually they do not need such treatment. This they do to keep up the worldly order of things. In this way, they set an example to men who, to continue his worldly routine wisely and resort to proper treatment whenever necessary. This is, of course, expected of the disciples to resort to such medicines as do not contain products or substance of animal sources. But some of the disciples who have unshakable faith in the benign power of the master healer within usually avoid the so-called remedial measures and allow nature to work on its own. For the healing power within is a part and parcel of the human system. The bodily disorders, as they come, should be accepted and borne cheerfully, for they are generally the result of our own dietetic errors and can be set right by resort to proper hygienic measures and selective foods. Hippocrates, the father of the medical system, emphasized that food should be taken as medicine. Even serious illnesses from karmic reaction has to be tolerated with patience and without grumbling or bitterness, because all karmic debts are to be paid and their accounts squared here and now. And the speedier it is done, the better, instead of keeping any outstanding balances to be paid hereafter. In time of Hazrat Mian Mir, the great Muslim devout and mystic, it is said that one of his disciples, Abdullah, went down with an ailment, withdrew his sentry crunch to the octopus, and closed himself safely in the Citadel of Peace. His master, Mian Mir, when visiting him, pulled Abdullah down to the body consciousness and ordered him to pay what was due to him, for he could not indefinitely evade payment by such tactics. Unlike most of us, Master Saints do not devote much time to their bodily needs and cares. They consider the physical raiment as a mere rag to be cast off one day. They take to hard physical and mental labor as need be, seeking no rest and repose, not sleeping for nights on end. Such prodigious acts present a riddle to modern science, though it is common practice with saints, for they are conversant with and make use of the higher laws of nature, of which we are quite ignorant. Deeds and karmas may be grouped under the heads of individual karmas and group karmas. The latter are karmas performed by a society or a nation as a whole, and these are termed as dharma. As an individual bears the fruits of his own karma actions, so does a society, for it has to bear the fruits of the general policies it pursues, with the result that innocent individuals have also to suffer for their wrongs arising from the wrongly conceived dharma of the society in which they belong. When Madhar Singh of Persia invaded India and ordered a general massacre of the people of Delhi, there was a consternation among the populace, and it was believed that the social wrongs of the nation had assumed the form of nadir. A just retribution for the sins of commission or omission is the very essence of the law of nature, and it visits in one form or another, call it what you may like, furies, unanimities, and the like. So this extract from the Wheel of Life can be found on Sandesh, October 1968. And thank you, Master, for allowing us to come here and have a opportunity to have satsang and imbibe your wisdom and grace.
Thank you, Eric, for reading Master's gracious words. There were 60 participants at tonight's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and thank you, Master, for graciously giving us the blessing of your satsang.
So now we have got the man body, you see. Masters come and say, well, dear friends, you have had man body. So many times you did not avail of it. You were attached to the outer world, to the material things. Now is the time again when you got a man body, just direct your love to God.